welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 94, Concha Banter. Today we are joined by Phil Gross, a Syracuse game designer. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Danielle. You know, I've been listening to the show ever since we met a couple years ago at CuseCon, and I'm a big fan, so it's an honor to be here.
Oh, you are the first person to say that. That's so nice. Or at least on air. Okay. Well, for anyone who doesn't know you, a mind telling them how you got into designing games?
Sure. Like you said, I'm from Syracuse, and I feel like it's kind of in the water out here. You know, there's some really cool pedigree that's been in the area for a long time. Alan Moon used to live here, and Scott Nicholson. But, you know, besides all that, I guess I first like seriously dabbled in game design about 6 years ago. I was just fumbling around. And then this game, Concha Banter, was the first one that I truly pursued professionally to try to get published. And that was, you know, 2 years ago. So May 2022. It's funny, like my parents say that I designed a lot of games when I was a kid. I only remember a couple of them. You know, school projects, if we were given the option, I think I made like a roll-in move for where the red fern grows. I ended up like building terrain for that. I remember making RPGs with my buddies when we like didn't know how to play D&D. And so I made an RPG for Zelda. I think my friends were really disappointed when I didn't hide any rupees in the grass. It's, I don't think I had like, you know, different game designers talk about like having the impetus to like redevelop existing games. And interestingly, that's never been for me. Like, that's not like my approach generally. I tend to be more just like, I want to start from the ground up. But all the same, I think that play and design are kind of germane to being a child. And so I have kids of my own now. They're 10 and almost 4. And kids just like create rules and how to play all the time. So I don't know. I feel like lots more people could be game designers if they wanted to.
I feel like I love hanging out with children because they're just constantly thinking up random stuff. And they don't have that thing that adults have that tell them like, oh, no, that's dumb. Or like, oh, I'm going to be judged by this. Or like, oh, that was a stupid. Like, we're just so mean to ourselves. But kids are just like, we're going to do this thing. And then if you're someone like me who is the oldest child, just like makes the younger siblings go along with it.
Yeah, my daughter is the oldest at 10, and you know, but she's, when the four-year-old wants what he wants, he tends to get it, but she's very gracious with him. And so it's interesting the social dynamics that come out of it. And before game design, I was deep into improv, both performing and teaching and, you know, creating shows. And so, you know, that and writing, I pursued writing professionally for a couple of years. So I've had many different hats, and that's all contributed to how I approach game design. But, you know, a lot of it just comes back to like wanting to explore and, you know, find the reaches of what's possible.
Yeah, honestly, the improv background makes a lot of sense with the game Concha Banter that we're talking about in this episode, because I feel like a lot of it has to do with coming up with a new story or like a way to talk to someone and slip in those words. But for like anyone who hasn't played the game, like I got to play test it at CuseCon. How do you play the game? What's this game about that we're talking about?
Yeah, so Contrabanter is published by Skybound Tabletop, and it is a party game, a word smuggling party game, and it plays in about a half hour. It goes from 2 to 15 players, and the way it works is you're going to be divided into teams. You have to have at least one person on each team, and each team is going to get a secret hand of 3 secret word cards. And your goal is going to be to smuggle those words into conversation across 3 rounds. And the rounds are all question and answer format. So like one team asks a question, the other team has 90 seconds to answer. And in those 90 seconds, they need to find a way to say all 3 of their secret words. During that time as well, the questioning team can pause the timer to try to guess one of the words. If they're right, they get a point. And if a team manages to slip the words by without the other team guessing them, they get a point for each word that they did that. So then you're going to do that basically 3 rounds, and words that are guessed get replaced. So you'll always have a hand of 3 words going into the next round. And then the hook of the game, and this is the one like innovative rule that I'm really happy with, is that what counts as saying a word is hearing the whole sound of the word. So if my word, this is how I always teach the game, especially at conventions when there's, you know, geeks like us around. I'll say, if my word is con, then I could say something like, I'm in this for the long con, or that was really controversial. Or I could say, what's the greatest Star Trek movie of all time? And the person might say, oh, The Wrath of Khan. I'd say, you're right. And you could also say First Contact, which would be correct in the rules of the game, but maybe not to a Trekkie.
So basically someone else could also say it? Or you're saying on your same team, basically.
Yeah. So I should dive into that a little bit. So when you answer, anyone on the team can, on the answering team, can contribute together. So that is where a bit of the improv comes in, right? Is you're playing strong supports to each other and trying to, like, the strategy can come into ways like setting up softballs where you can start leading the conversation down a way that you believe will help you sneak a word in. So when you're answering the question, it's not just one person answering, it's the whole team answering, you know, almost all together.
Okay, gotcha. That's what I thought, but I wanted to just double check. I was like, wait, was there an extra rule that changed later on?
There was. I mean, since you played it at CuseCon, there was definitely some development, and like really neat things happened even that night. The one that was substantial was Corey Andalora, who's a fine designer from Vermont, and often works with Donnie Coleman. Corey aptly pointed out that the incentives for the guessing system were bad at the time. And I was really shooting myself in my own foot at the time. The guessing system was such that if I guessed a word wrong, then my opponent could discard one of their secret words.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so Corey pointed out, he said, I would never guess a word because it's too good a reward for my opponent. And not only was he right about that, he was also right because the whole point of the game is having to say the words again. And so by taking that, you know, giving that escape valve, it was kind of ruining the play of the game in a way. So it was really helpful feedback that night. And so we came up with a different guessing system shortly after. Basically, it's you have a guessing resource, you know, you get 3 guesses per round, and you can always use one if you still have it after the answering is done. And the penalty changed as well. So there is no penalty. So instead of losing a card, the player would just keep their card, you know, their secret word. So it got changed to a cost to the guesser instead of any sort of benefit to the team that was answering.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I was playing with Corey and Donnie and the rest of them, because then we were also playtesting my balls game and some other ones that night. That was a fun night. So I'm glad you got a lot out of that.
Yeah, for sure. It was intimidating. I'll tell you what, when 9 designers came over to my table And I respect all of you a great deal. And I knew that I was, you know, new and fresh and had some work to do. It was a little scary, but thankfully, you know, y'all were very gracious. Shout out. I remember Donnie was there. Whitney Logan was there, who you've had on the show before.
I mean, I've also had Donnie and Corey on the show too, actually, for their mission control.
That's right. So, you know, it ended up being all a good learning experience. So very good.
No, that's so awesome. And then were there any other changes that happened through like playtesting and developing, either like before it got signed with Skybound or during it being like developed?
Yes, lots. So the core was all there in the first playtest. When I first had the idea for the game, I had an inkling that there would be some kind of, I first thought of it as a social deduction word game. It still kind of is. But with social deduction comes this idea of having roles across the teams. And so I thought like, oh, there's going to be like androids that have the secret words and humans that have something else. And fortunately, the first playtest was with my family. And I immediately recognized just by instinct that they would not understand what I was delivering on that role-based level. And I stripped it away. And it ended up being for the best. That zig instead of that zag took the game in a very simple direction. And so, you know, that concept solidified of needing to repeat the words, that especially came from my improv background. You know, there's the rule of threes that once you get a joke rolling three times, it becomes sort of a game or, you know, source for comedy in itself. So that stayed for sure. Other things that changed, originally the game was all individuals. There were no teams. And that only lasted for a while because I was really just stubborn. I thought, oh, I don't want to be a copycat. Like, these are all amateur mistakes. I was thinking, well, I don't want to just be like code names. But then as soon as I tried it out, the benefits of having teams were immediately apparent. Not only was there that element of strong support that we talked about earlier, but also it allowed for players who are more introverted to be able to contribute significantly and feel more included than they might usually feel in this kind of talkative game. So I would play, you know, we would have, you know, couples over for a, you know, sort of date night playtesting, and my one friend Mike and his partner were there, and he was from an improv background and she was not. And she actually did not talk for the entire game, but guessed our words every single round. And so that was when I knew, like, okay, there can be different kinds of play that are rewarded here that are pretty valuable. Other things, so I originally had a different criteria for endgame trigger and for progression through the game. It was it had way more teeth on it, and it could allow for some snowballing. And so with Skybound's guidance, we ironed that out to the system it is now with the points. But originally it was, this will sound kind of crazy now, but you actually earned more words when you snuck your words by. And so the game end trigger was earning a sixth word was one of the triggers. And so now players had to sneak 5 words in the final round if they were doing really well. That was definitely good for a certain type of player, but it was not as inclusive or accessible. So thankfully we ironed that out. I already mentioned the guessing. And then the last thing I can get into, oh, actually there's 2 other things that changed while it was under Skybound. One was they added a really simple prompt card system. I had something similar, but they added a lot more flavor to it. And it's really, people just enjoy it. It's an easy way to get things rolling. And then the advanced mode, I had originally conceived an advanced mode that would have different point values for easy to say words and hard to say words. But as I played it more, I realized that, again, I was shooting myself in my own foot because the words in the existing manifest were so tightly balanced to be the right level of challenge to both sneak and guess. So by going beyond that spectrum, it just kind of ruined the system. So thankfully, you know, we worked at it some more, playtested, and I came up with this pretty wild idea for marked words. And so the advanced system is that you introduce one marked word per round, and it starts in the middle of the table. And if you hear the opponent's team say one of the marked words, you steal it from them. And then it can keep on being stolen back and forth, and it's worth a point. And the trick is the words are all incredibly hard not to say, right? They're very, very simple words like game or no or word. And so when you play with that layer added on, it's just this kind of zany level of chaos. It's probably not for everyone, but I mean, the people who have tried it have gotten a real kick out of it.
No, that's awesome. I actually remember trying it and constantly accidentally saying the word, but thankfully no one noticed. I was like, yes. It's like funny because it makes me feel like I'm cheating, but I'm not cheating.
Yeah, that's so funny you say that, because some of the best comedy in the game comes out of that error of people not recognizing when something was said on their own team. So, you know, a team only needs to say each secret word once.
Oh no, but someone will repeat and get caught.
Yes.
That's rough.
So your own teammate may have already said it. It actually happened just last night. We had a very nice little launch party. I was playing it with some friends, and the team's word was fist. And I was like, okay, guys, I got an awesome way to sneak this one in next round. And I said something about, like, oh, my Mennonite friends, they're all pacifist. And neither of my partners on my team picked up on it. And so they ended up saying fist in some other way and got guessed. So it was just hilarious.
And so if the team had said, like, pacifist was the word, but fist was actually the word, they would still get the point, right?
Yep. For the guess rule is the same as the saying rule. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I was also thinking I really did enjoy the team aspect of the game, because I have played other kind of conversation-y, like, gray matter games, Slip It In. I played that one, and I actually felt like it was super on the spot, and there was a lot of, like, really weird things you had to, like, slip into the conversation. And it felt more like a meta game that would be played through, like, the week, or at least through the night, versus, like, we're going to sit down and play this game. Like, yours had more, like, here's the constraints, here's, like, a topic so we can start talking, and so it feels less, like, I mean, it was still improv, but less on the spot, because I'm a creative person, but a lot of my friends are not, or not to the same way that I am. And so they do not like playing a lot of those kinds of games. So, like, when we've played the Slip It In, they've had issues trying to, like, do that, or they would give up or get frustrated. And so yours helped solve that problem by doing kind of the team versus one versus everybody.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And so the intent for the design, and actually originally, and still in the rules, you can come up with any question you want, right? And so there's a little strategy there. You can try to guide the conversation. But in that way, when you let someone come up with the question, and I think the prompts that we have help with this too, they're all meant to be just conversational, right? The conversations that we're having in this game are not weird or arcane, or, you know, they're just, we're talking about our daily lives mostly. And so that tends to make it a lot more accessible than if it had, like, a theme put on it, or if it was required to be within a certain setting. The conversation is just us talking. And it also ends up being really delightful just to connect with people and learn more about them. You know, it has that sort of dual layer of social interaction where we are being witty together and, like, bluffing and guessing what the other person's doing, while at the same time, we are just enjoying each other's company in a really delightful way. I don't have as much time to play party games as I used to, especially being a parent now. That's changing as my kids get older, but you know, I would love to try out, like, some of Amy Bio's conversation games. I really admire what she's doing in the space. I think, you know, those kinds of games, there's a lot of room for it. And when we were working on this, you know, it was still pandemic time. And so I think that's reflected in the design, that it was of an era where these kinds of conversations were scarcely happening and we craved it. And so I think, you know, there's still a need for that.
I was going to say, it's interesting you say that, because I still do pitch to publishers. And right now, a lot of publishers are asking for those conversation games, which my very first game I ever had published was called No Filter. And it was a conversation party game.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like LCR meets conversation, except stripped down a little bit more. And it was nothing like super fancy. There's not actually a win condition. It's just the winning is getting to know each other. It's cool that we are doing more conversation games, because it's not just like, I mean, sure, we can all write questions, but we can put them in different ways. We can introduce them in different criteria like you did with your game. I think there's definitely a space for it. And Amy also, yeah, agreed. Shout out. She was great. She was on the show a season or two ago. Yeah, it's really cool to see like what people are doing with it. I think like mechanics can't be copywritten. So why not just keep using it and mashing it into new fun game ideas?
Yeah. And there must have been something in the zeitgeist, because, you know, I first heard about mansplaining on your show with, you know, for Tessa and Mondo. And it sounds, I still haven't played it, but I read the rules and it sounds like, you know, they were probably wrapping that up around the same time I had the idea for Contrabanter. And it turns out there's another, I think, Japanese based game that has a similar mechanic. I was talking to Nathan Thornton at Origins, and he said he was working on something with a similar mechanic. So it's interesting how those things all kind of form. And I still, like I said, I still really want to try mansplaining. It sounds so cool. I really admire those two.
It is totally true, though. It's like a wave of like nature games or wave of whatever mechanic. But how did you end up finding Skybound as the publisher for the game?
Yeah, that was a cool story. So I started the design in May of 22 and was playtesting it locally. It was going so well. I started to connect with some local professionals, like our mutual friend, Mike Gugliano. Then, you know, I had already gotten like some kind of professional ambition, I guess, or impetus from having done writing, right? I had tried to get novels published before. And I think you really need to like have some of that go-getter attitude to really get through that first door. And so for me, it was going to PAX Unplugged. It was my second time I had been there. I had been there once like 7 or 8 years before, just as a player. It was my first time going to a con as a designer. And I went all out. Like I printed quarter sheets with like both games I was testing and handed them out to strangers on the escalator to get them to come to Unpub to try my game. Like I had no idea really what I was doing. I just knew like I had to try and get out there and get people to do the thing. And of course, the community is way more generous than I could have ever anticipated. I think maybe a couple people I met handing out that quarter sheet came back and tested the game, and dozens more just came and tried it. So while I was there testing, a man sat down across from me at the table, and he was just sort of passively watching me test for over a half hour. And then it was in between plays, and he asked me a few, you know, gentle questions, and then finally introduced himself, and it was Ben Kepner from Skybound. And Ben is, like I've described, he's gentle, he's wise, you know, he's professional, great guy. And so I kind of recognized that I was in this meeting opportunity and, you know, sort of quickly started pitching my game. And then my new friend, hopefully a guy whose name you'll all hear soon enough on the designer streets, Gabe Godoy, he leapt in and said how much he loved my game and was pitching for me to Ben. And I immediately passed off the favor and started saying, oh, but you got to see Gabe's game because there's this one that he's working on. And, you know, Gabe and I ended up becoming fast friends that weekend, left and started co-designing together within a week.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. And a few months into that, we had to be like, hey, I got something I need to tell you, because both of our games had been signed out of that relationship. So that was, you know, the start of things. And, you know, Ben's got a strong development team. You know, the business team at Skybound has been really good to work with. And that all got the ball rolling.
Oh, that's so cute. I love that you guys were each other's little wing person and then you ended up together co-designing. Aw.
Yeah, we love it. So we're working on a second game together now that we're aiming to pitch at Philly again this fall. Yeah, he lives out in LA and he's an Oscar-winning short doc producer, two-time. Everybody should look up the last two short documentaries that won. It was about Instrument Shop was the last one I remember, out in the LA school district. So yeah, he's just the coolest guy. So I'm really happy to be working with him no matter what.
I think that's really cool. I've definitely had that where you meet a person at a convention and you immediately click and then you're just like making games with them. And it's really fun when that happens. And it's like a feeling that you don't always get, especially because like sometimes you make fast friends, but like designing games is like a different form of friendship or partnership.
Yeah, it's been really fruitful. We've learned a lot together. You know, we took the game that we started co-designing that first time, we ended up taking to Philly last year, and it's probably not going anywhere. You know, we've shelved it for now, but we made some great connections out of it and we learned a ton. So it was totally worth it. So anyways, Gabe's probably listening. So hi, Gabe.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I think that's also a good thing to learn is sometimes a game won't ever get made, but it's like the people you connect with or the experience is really useful. Cause I know I am finally getting to the point where I'm killing my darlings off or shelving them or like adding a co-designer or whatever it is. And that can be hard, especially when you have a co-designer involved. It's one of those things like one person might be done with it. The other person might still believe in it. And it's like, it's painful and it's way worse than just like you yourself deciding. It's like the two of you together have to like put your baby to bed.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one we're working on now took so many different turns before we got it to, you know, what we're doing now, I think, and not just like small iterations, but like entire genres of changes. And, you know, we're just following the fun together. So it's been a hoot. But yeah, you've worked with Scott Brady and, you know, some really cool people. So yeah, you get it.
Yes, I do. Yep. I definitely totally get it. Well, then for Contrabanter, like how long do you think it took from that initial thought of a game to it coming out for people to play?
Yeah, I mean, it's like 2 years to the day, pretty much, because it was May 22. I can find like the original prototypes to like the early release was May this year or June or so. So yeah, pretty wild.
Damn. Yeah, that's a good turnaround. 2 years. Perfect. And what was your favorite and least favorite part of the journey of this design in particular?
So favorite, it's got to just be playing the dang thing, you know? And like you said, like the process is key. And if you're not having the good time, the whole, you know, at least some of the time, but it's been really good from day one, just the experience of the play. And I have super fond memories of introducing this to family, some distant relatives at a party, and we hadn't seen each other for at least a year, and we bust this out and the whole room is just full of laughter. So yeah, playing the thing. The hardest part, I'll say, is actually pretty recent. So, and this is a hot new news for you on the podcast. So we knew for a long time that there was a dominant strategy in the game that was a vulnerability, and that is simply listing words. basically, you know, if you're trying to sneak in, you know, Fist, to go back to the old example, then you could just start saying, like, you know, I know karate and I use my fist, I use my foot, I use my knee, I use my elbow. And that's not fun. It's technically right within the rules, and it doesn't break the game per se, but it abuses it.
Yeah, it's not in the spirit of the game.
Right. But, you know, like, the hard lesson there was that there's going to be players who are more like Mark Rosewater's Spike from, you know, the old player personalities that he came up with for Magic. Like Spike, who just want to dominate the thing. And, you know, Spike should be able to play Contrabanter too. And other people should be able to play with Spike. So when I developed it with Skybound, we talked about this, and I had considered it before. And basically our agreed upon solution was that the word manifest was curated in a way that we had tried to eliminate categories that were easier to list.
That makes sense, yeah.
So that was how I approached it, because, I mean, I recognized it the first playtest, because I think I had, like, apple as one of the words, and my mom just went on a tirade listing fruits. So I cut out foods, I cut out animals, I think. There's probably a couple others, but I generally just, I thought about it very deeply about, like, okay, which of these is easy to put within a certain domain of words and, like, likely to list off them. That said, if you're creative enough in that certain way, then you could still do that. It's still possible. So I've, you know, since the game's come out, we've gotten, as you know, once the thing is out as a public piece of art, people are going to do with it in ways that, you know, are even beyond what you maybe initially expected. And so we've heard from a couple sources that they have an issue with this, and we respect that. And I think the very simple solution, which I've just gotten done emailing with Ben about, you know, over the last week, is that, you know, for the next printing, we're going to add a rule that basically says secret words must be said inside a sentence or a phrase and not within a list. That's it. And it's a blunt instrument. I understand, like, as a designer, there's probably a more elegant way to include that. But to just have that simple correction as it is and be able to tell players, like, hey, if you pick up a copy, you know, this is the official house rule. So it was painful to get that kind of feedback, for sure. You know, it's the sort of thing that with the other player personality types, the game still shines, right? Like, other players may recognize that listing is dominant and then just kind of choose not to do it because it doesn't feel good to win that way, or it doesn't feel good for the other players to lose that way. But that, like I said, that I'm not saying that as a, like, oh, this is the right answer. I'm trying to explain how we got to that solution, even after having playtested with hundreds of different people. Right. So I think the better answer is, you know, what we will publicize starting tonight.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't see a problem with something like that. That's like when you do drawing games and you say, hey, yeah, no writing words, because it should be an obvious, like, oh, it's not really drawing if you're writing what it is, but you still gotta put it in the rule book. So yeah, like, I know we chose to not do letters or numbers, but we allowed symbols. So it was like, meh, pick your battles, because some places they let you do one or the other or whatever. But yeah, totally makes sense. For you, from your experience, do you have any advice for, like, newer designers, since you did say that you were coming up newer on the scene?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many practical things. Please, you know, seek out different communities. It can be on Discord or Facebook, and ask the simple practical questions. Learn about the tools. If you're making a card game, you got to get Nandeck or Multideck. You know, find something that works for you. But there are so many things that make it way more efficient. But, you know, the real actual good advice I can share, I've said this other places, is one lesson that I had to learn with this one was I got such strong positive feedback from the outset that I had blinders on to some of the actual game design changes that needed to be made. And so that's an easy trap to fall into, is if players are enjoying the way the game in the way that you envisioned, it doesn't necessarily mean that the game design is complete or that it's in its best form yet. You know, there are still ways to improve it, especially most likely. I'm just assuming that, you know, this new game designer isn't Shakespeare right out the gate, but that there's probably some wisdom, even when you're seeing it go so incredibly well, there's probably some wisdom that you have not quite uncovered yet.
No, I think that's a very interesting one. I feel like the longer I've been designing, the faster I'm getting to figuring out what the fun is. And then there are times where I'm like, no, but this is fun. Like, I'll have arguments with a co-designer who's just like, no, let's try this other thing. But I'm like, but this works. And so I get the same blinders sometime where I'm like, all right, I guess we'll test your thing too. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes I'm right.
Yeah, you have to be kind of scientific about it, right? You have to say like, okay, we'll try that. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt you to try it once, especially if it's a party game. It's like, it's not some crazy like multi-hour game that one thing you're trying could like take away part of your life. But yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And then do you have any other projects that are signed that people should be looking out for? I know you mentioned that you're pitching some stuff.
Yeah, not just yet. There's a couple that are very deep in negotiations right now. I mean, if people expect party games from me, they'll be in for a big surprise if these ones come to fruition. So, you know, lots of hopefully soon, you know, within the next year, maybe I'd be able to say something.
Well, that's awesome. Look forward to a different form of reveal than I guess next time. And then for my last question of the show, as you know, since you listen, if you could have been the designer of a game that's not your current one, what would you have chosen?
This I was ready for, and I've been thinking about it ever since we first talked about getting on the show. And thank you again for having me. But my answer is a game that's about to come out at Gen Con, and it's called It's Obvious. It's by my friend Jay Bucciarelli, and Jay and I are not coincidentally co-designing a game right now that we just started on at Origins. Pretty similar story to with Gabe, where we were just hanging out a lot, and then, you know, Jay had an idea, and we talked about it deeply, and now we're, you know, knee-deep in this thing. But It's Obvious is coming out from Friendly Skeleton, and it is a party game, and it's a social deduction party game in which players are going to be given two choices, and it's a 1-2 choice. So number one might be Star Wars and number two might be Star Trek, right? And everyone has two voting cards, one and two. You're going to choose privately which one you personally, you know, love, associate with, whatever, and turn it in. And that's going to get shuffled. And then we're going to reveal and count up which one or two, won the majority. The victory conditions are now such that the players who are in the majority actually want to find the players who are in the minority. And the players who are in the minority just need to sneak by. So now we're going to talk about who actually loves Star Wars and who actually loves Star Trek, and whoever, let's say Star Wars was majority, now every Trekkie at the table is lying through their teeth that they love Star Wars, and every Star Wars fan at the table is trying to defend themselves as not being the Trekkie in disguise.
So you want to hear something funny? I've actually played this game.
Oh, great.
I played it with Jacob because we were testing it at the gathering. And I was like, oh, because, oh my God. I think one of the questions was, does a straw have one hole or two holes? And that was the most intense conversation that came up. And it was so funny where people like fell, like Kathleen Mercury was just making shit up out of her ass. And I was just like, yes. What are you even saying? She starts going into mathematics. And I'm like, what is happening right now?
It is so simple. I think it's a classic. I mean, I hope people find it and fall in love with it as much as I did. Gabe and I got to play it with them at PAX when it was still in development with Friendly Skeleton. And we played for 2.5 hours straight. And it was like, I gotta go to sleep, guys. I'm sorry. Like, I wish we could keep playing. It was so good. So I can't wait to get my hands on a copy.
Definitely, I would say check it out. And I believe this is going to air actually right after Gen Con. So hopefully people will already have it in their hands when they're playing it. But I really do appreciate you coming on the show. And like, thank you for everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 94, Contrabander. And thanks again, Phil. Anyone trying to find you online? Is there anywhere you can be found or followed?
Yep, I'm on Blue Sky. It's just Mr. Gross, all spelled out, is my handle. Feel free to follow me there. I love supporting, you know, fellow designers, and I'd love to connect. If you have any questions about any of that stuff, just hit me up.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. You can find me on also Blue Sky, Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it, Instagram, and that's all under the username Token Gamer, and that's GAYMER, as well as if you're interested in my games, like find me on BoardGameGeek or DMRCreativeGroup.com. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, and thanks for listening to the show. I always love to hear that. That's always something that surprises me a little more than anything else that I do.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure, Danielle. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out NoDirectionPodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at Let'sAllPlay.com. Join us next time.